Lamotrigine was launched for bipolar disorder in 2003, but it was a quiet launch. And since then, a few myths have gathered around it as if to fill that vacuum. Today, we'll address four of them. Welcome to Psych Pearls Podcast with Psychiatric Times, the voice of psychiatry. With thoughtful insights into the world of mental health, this podcast provides timely clinical commentary and practical cutting-edge pearls for you in your practice. We hope you enjoy.
I'm Chris Aiken, the Mood Disorders Section Editor for Psychiatric Times and the Editor-in-Chief of the Carlatt Psychiatry Report.
And I'm Kelly Newsom, a psychiatric NP and the co-host of the Carlatt Psychiatry Podcast. On June 20, 2003, the world had its eyes on the U.S. invasion of Iraq. Some of us were following Martha Stewart's indictment for insider trading, and quite a few were lining up at bookstores to be the first to buy the fifth installment in the Harry Potter series. But Dr. Russell Catt was busy at his desk on this day at the FDA headquarters, writing a letter to GlaxoSmithKline announcing the approval of their anticonvulsant lamotrigine, Lamictal, in bipolar disorder. But the approval was not a slam dunk. GlaxoSmithKline had submitted 12 trials, and only two of them were positive. Lamotrigine did not work in acute mania, it did not work in acute bipolar depression, and it did not work in rapid cycling. But bipolar disorder is a chronic condition, and that is where the medication succeeded, in the maintenance phase. The two positive studies looked at lamotrigine in the long term, over 1.5 years. There, lamotrigine helped patients stay well about twice as long as a placebo. Dr. Katz knew that long-term studies like this were expensive and hard to come by, but for patients who have to stay on a mood stabilizer year after year, it is this kind of data that matters most. So he gave it an indication for delaying new episodes of depression, hypomania, and mania in bipolar disorder.
And that is how lamotrigine was launched. But there are a lot of loose threads in that story that have tangled into myths over the years, and today we're going to unravel four of them so you can use lamotrigine more effectively in your practice. But first, a warning. Lamotrigine is not a panacea. It works in bipolar disorder, but it does not treat non-bipolar depression. There, the studies are mixed. Half are positive, half are negative. It has positive controlled trials as well in obsessive-compulsive disorder, borderline personality disorder, and one in depersonalization disorder. But those studies are few and small. So don't start prescribing lamotrigine to every moody person you see, because this medicine has one big risk that makes those uncharted adventures unwise, the potentially fatal rash of Stevens-Johnson syndrome. That rash is part of the reason that lamotrigine had such a soft launch. Early on, the manufacturer decided not to market lamotrigine to primary care practices and to minimize direct-to-consumer advertising. The decision may have hurt their quarterly profits, but it helped them stay in the market. You see, lamotrigine was nearly yanked off the market after its launch in epilepsy 10 years earlier. Back then, doctors were starting the medication at 100 milligrams a day, which led to an alarming rise in this potentially fatal Stevens-Johnson syndrome rashes. The medication only survived when the company was able to show that it could lower this risk through the slow titrations that we use today, starting with 25 milligrams a day. Now that risk is around 1 in 3,000. So GlaxoSmithKline was concerned that if they overhyped the drug for bipolar disorder, then clinicians with little experience in bipolar disorder would prescribe it to every moody person they saw. And if they overlooked the DSM in that way, they might also overlook the titration instructions, causing a second flare of serious rashes that would then cause the FDA to pull the medication from the market.
And now let's get into those myths. There are four of them. Myth 1, lamotrigine does not help mania. Myth 2, lamotrigine does not treat acute episodes of bipolar depression. Myth 3, lamotrigine is a weak mood stabilizer. Myth 4, it's a good idea to stop lamotrigine when a patient relapses, because it's probably not working. Let's start with the first, myth number 1, lamotrigine does not help mania.
Actually, this myth is kind of true. Lamotrigine failed in the acute mania trials, and nothing that we've learned about this drug in the 25 years since suggests that it has any role in acute mania. But lamotrigine does help prevent mania, although it is better at preventing depression than it is at preventing mania. What that means in practice is that you shouldn't rely on it as the sole maintenance medication in a patient with a history of severe mania. But you might use lamotrigine as monotherapy maintenance in bipolar II disorder, because that's where the depressions are more common and the manic symptoms are mild and brief. In fact, many bipolar experts see good results in cyclothymic patients, the ones who cycle frequently between mild depression, hypomania, and mixed states. That observation is only supported by open-label studies, but hey, there are zero controlled medication trials in cyclothymic disorder, so open-label is about as good as it gets.
Myth number two, lamotrigine does not treat acute episodes of bipolar depression.
Among the 12 trials on Dr. Katz's desk, five of them are good candidates for the most disappointing trials in the history of psychiatry. These were the five controlled trials in acute bipolar depression with lamotrigine, all funded by the manufacturer, and all of them failed. The trials were never published, but most psychiatrists knew about them when lamotrigine was released, and it gave some of us the impression that lamotrigine was a weak mood stabilizer that barely got approved for an indication that wasn't at the top of the list for most doctors or patients. Prevention. But since then, we've learned that lamotrigine does treat acute bipolar depression. It just takes a little longer than faster options like the atypical antipsychotics. The problem is that the early studies only lasted 7 weeks, and lamotrigine requires a slow titration that takes 4 to 6 weeks to even reach a therapeutic level. Later, lamotrigine did prove efficacious for acute bipolar depression in 2 independently funded, randomized, placebo-controlled trials.
Wait a minute. You're saying the industry-sponsored trials were all negative, but the independent ones were positive? That's a first.
Yes, and the difference is the independently sponsored trials gave lamotrigine a little more time. They lasted 8 to 12 weeks instead of 7 weeks. Also, lamotrigine was used as augmentation in these independent trials. In one, it augmented lithium, and in the other, it augmented quetiapine. But I think lamotrigine can work as monotherapy in acute bipolar depression, and the real difference here was the time span, not the fact that it was augmentation.
One reason we think it works as monotherapy is that John Geddes, Joseph Calabresi, and Guy Goodwin reanalyzed the original 5 negative trials in an independently funded meta-analysis. They found that there was a positive signal in the original studies, but they were too small to detect it. When combined together, totaling 1,072 patients, lamotrigine had a small effect, bringing about a meaningful response in 1 out of 11 patients. But hey, cariprazine Vraylar got FDA approval in bipolar depression with the same number needed to treat. And lamotrigine's efficacy only starts to build at that 7-week mark. If you use lamotrigine for acute depression, you'll probably need to wait about a month and a half to see an effect. And judging from the longer trials, those benefits are likely to keep building over the next 1 to 4 months. A common strategy, then, is to start lamotrigine with a faster-acting agent, like an atypical antipsychotic, and then slowly taper off the antipsychotic as lamotrigine starts to kick in. This gives you the best of both worlds. Lamotrigine has excellent tolerability over the long term, with a low risk of weight gain, fatigue, cognitive problems, sexual dysfunction, or any of the long-term medical problems that show up in the warnings for antipsychotics.
One medical risk that we don't think enough about in bipolar disorder is stroke. Stroke is the number one leading cause of death in bipolar disorder, and lamotrigine and lithium are the only mood stabilizers I know of that do not increase the risk of stroke. All the others have some marks against them in the literature. I'm going to get on a soapbox for a minute here and argue that bipolar disorder is not a mental disorder. It's a physical disorder. And not just because the brain is a physical organ. Recently, we learned that heart disease starts 10 to 15 years earlier in people with bipolar disorder, and you can even detect cardiovascular changes in teens with bipolar. You know, lifestyle might play a role here, but think about all that adrenaline pumping through the veins during mania and mixed states. This is a whole body illness, and we ought to be thinking about long-term morbidity and mortality when choosing a mood stabilizer, not just relieving acute symptoms.
Dr. Aiken, are you off your soapbox yet?
I have one more thing to say. The DSM is often criticized for promoting biological psychiatry through its black box symptom list approach. But to me, the DSM is not biological enough. You could read the whole book and walk away with little sense that these mental illnesses are wreaking havoc on the heart, the GI tract, and the immunologic and neuroendocrine systems. You'd never get that sense from reading Harrison's textbook of internal medicine.
Okay, let's get back to lamotrigine now. Myth number 3. Lamotrigine is a weak mood stabilizer.
That's a good place to pick up. There is a myth that treatments like lamotrigine that are slow to act are not strong ones. But this is not how chronic diseases are approached in other medical specialties, which naturally take a long-term, disease-modifying view. You'll never see a diabetes study that looks at change on a symptom checklist over 4 weeks. Or take hypertension. Clonidine lowers blood pressure right away, but most physicians prefer a thiazide for hypertension because it lowers the long-term risks of morbidity and mortality. People with bipolar disorder die 10 years earlier on average, and not from suicide. Kelly, can you read the top causes of death in bipolar disorder?
1. Stroke. 2. Heart disease. 3. Cancer. 4. Diabetes. 5. Chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, COPD. 6. Pneumonia and influenza. 7. Accidental injuries. And lastly, 8. Suicide.
So if you can find a mood stabilizer that reduces those risks, or at least doesn't increase them, that's golden. Lamotrigine is neutral on all of those risks. And lithium brings down most of them. Specifically, lithium lowers the risk of heart disease, stroke, cancer, viral infections, and suicide.
But we're getting a bit ahead of ourselves here. I mean, long-term medical risks are important when considering a mood stabilizer, but we also want something that prevents the episodes. Here we have an interesting finding from studies that have compared lithium and lamotrigine. Lithium offers better prevention against the manic side, while lamotrigine works better against the depressive side. So combining the two makes sense. And one study did that, the LAM-LIT trial, and confirmed that there are indeed additional benefits to combining the two.
And that's the long-term perspective that we need to take when choosing a mood stabilizer. This doesn't come naturally in psychiatry. If you work in a hospital, insurance is pressuring you to get the patient better quickly. So lamotrigine is not going to be your go-to agent. And if you work in an outpatient office, ask yourself this. When was the last time a patient came in saying, "I'd like a medication to prevent bipolar disorder," which is what lamotrigine is FDA approved for? In psychiatry, we treat suffering, and our patients want something that'll work quickly for that. And that brings us to the fourth myth, myth number 4. It's a good idea to stop lamotrigine when a patient relapses because it's probably not working.
In the maintenance trials, lamotrigine delayed the time to a new episode by 197 days. That's about half a year, versus 86 days or 3 months for placebo. So it's about twice as effective as placebo, but it doesn't provide 100% protection. No mood stabilizer does. In practice, here's what I tell patients when starting it. Lamotrigine's going to have a slow build because you have to raise it slowly to prevent a serious rash. That means you're going to feel better gradually over the next 1 to 2 months. But on the other hand, you're not likely to have many side effects or medicated feelings. And that's a good thing because you're likely to need something long-term to prevent mood problems. And this one doesn't have any major long-term risks. But keep in mind, it's not going to prevent all mood episodes, but it will cut the rate of those episodes in half. So instead of having depression, say, every year, it may be every 2 years, but no medication does everything, and there's a lot you can do to raise those odds of success. Then I talk about behavioral strategies for bipolar and depression. If you're interested in that, we have a separate podcast for patients that teaches these strategies. Search for The Pocket Psychiatrist in your podcast store.
A common mistake in practice is to stop lamotrigine when an episode returns, which is a bit like stopping a blood pressure medication and cholesterol medication because a patient had a heart attack. Lamotrigine's most robust effects are in prevention, and prevention is difficult to measure in psychiatry. You'd need a before and after mood chart to confirm that the medication is actually lowering the frequency of episodes as it promises to do. Even then, the work is difficult because so many other factors can make mood better or worse. What I look for is improvement on lamotrigine in the first 3 to 6 months after starting it. If a patient stops it, I watch for worsening over the next 3 to 6 months, because they usually don't get worse right away. And I also listen for something else that I've heard a lot of patients say on lamotrigine, particularly those with the frequent ups and downs of cyclothymic disorder. Patients often tell me, after starting lamotrigine, that they still feel the same about whatever stresses and problems they were having in life, but that the feelings are less overwhelming. They see things in perspective better. And that matches up well with what we see in neuroimaging studies of lamotrigine. The amygdala is less reactive to emotionally disturbing images. There is a rise in brain strengthening BDNF in the amygdala and frontal lobes. Overall, there are volumetric changes in both the amygdala, which reacts to emotional events, and the frontal lobes, which temper those emotional reactions and help people see things in perspective.
That really sounds like something we all could use.
Hold it there. This medication is not for everyone. And those imaging studies I just mentioned were done in people with bipolar disorder. We have no reason to think it would have the same effect in others.
Always on your soapbox. We'll be back with more practical updates on Psych Pearls. And you can also catch us every Monday on the Carlat Psychiatry Podcast.